Welcome to the Diane McClay Show, empowering life through choice. Get ready to discover new perspectives, motivation, and balance through Diane's compassionate storytelling and insightful discussions. Whether you're feeling stuck and discouraged, or curious and looking for more possibilities, Diane has your back, and she's ready to take you on a journey of self-discovery and expansion. Choice is powerful, and so are you. The Diane McClay Show starts now.
Welcome in, everybody, and happy Friday. Welcome to the Transformation Talk Radio Network and to the Cornelia Stephanie Media Group Network. I'm your host, Diane McClay, and we are here to talk about how you rethink your waste. Yes, it is a problem, and yes, it's something we don't even think about every single day, and I'm so happy that I have my friend and earth advocate and recycling extraordinaire, Julie Tucker. She's a member of the Oregon Association of Recyclers. She's the owner and project manager of Emerald Systems LLC, which is a sustainability and consulting company here in the Columbia River Gorge. They're a materials management firm where they help rural communities effectively and efficiently re-divert waste from the landfill stream and put it back into essentially the supply chain. Julie's a community-driven leader that inspires small towns and rural communities to come together and come up with new solutions to old waste problems. And her mission statement is that she wants to help everybody change the way they think about their waste. So, Julie, I'm going to say welcome in. Thank you for being here. You and I spent some time sorting plastic, having conversations about what works and what doesn't work. And I'm excited because I feel like plastic recycling in general is confusing to a lot of people. It's overwhelming. A lot of people just don't feel like they have the time or energy to do it. And I think today we're going to help change people's mind and help rethink things. So welcome in. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. And just tell people a little bit about yourself. You just said before we got on the air, you've been in this recycling world since 87. That's since I graduated high school. That's more than 30 years of experience. A lot has changed over those 30 years, I'm sure. So give our listeners just a quick, brief history. How did you get into this? Why are you still in it? Where's your passion? Let's give them a little bit about why you're here today, and then we'll jump into our topic.
Okay, so from a small child, I've kind of always had this social justice personality of kind of running to help the environment or help the underdog. And so that's kind of led me into the path that I'm at. 87, I started working for OBRC, which is the Oregon Beverage Recycling Cooperative, which is the bottle bill. And as I started there,
No worries. It's all good.
I have my phone on.
No worries. It's all good.
I still did it. I started there at OBRC. I worked there for 3 or 4 years. I kind of then left and worked in several different types of the industries in the recycling industry. I took a little bit of a break. Studied renewable energy systems, learned a lot about waste to energy type systems. But when I really started a career of it is probably started back in 2012, and I went to work for Oregon's largest organic farms, a food distributor. And they asked me to come in and bring their farms and their warehouses and their headquarters and their call centers and their gas stations, all zero waste. So I did that for about 6 years.
I want to interrupt you quick, real there. Zero waste. Is it possible? Do you believe that we can live in a society with zero waste?
No. Zero waste is a philosophy.
Okay.
I don't have it in front of me, but there's an actual terminology of what the definition of zero waste is.
And in essence, from my understanding, and we don't have to go into it right now because since we know that it's difficult to do and it's a philosophy, we could spend hours debating philosophy. And really what we want to do is just help people grab on to the concept that the word behind me is choice, that they can actually make choices in their life to move towards a zero waste concept, which actually my understanding is it's basically whatever you use or purchase, there's some level of offsetting that happens on the back end so that eventually it zeroes out. It's not actually like zero waste, even though there are components of that that are achievable, but it's the mindset of rethinking how we purchase, rethinking how we produce, rethinking how we extract from the earth, right? Yeah. The concept is, if the goal is zero waste, and just like with the environmental bills, if the goal is zero gas emissions or zero greenhouse gases, if we reduce our stuff by 50%, we're not at zero, but we're way better, right? That's the concept.
Yeah.
By the way, side note, when you were working on with the Oregon bottle bill, I was actually sorting bottles and cans as my first job out of high school in a local small town grocery store. I was literally pitching Pepsi cans into a Pepsi, right?
Yeah.
So historically you and I are tied through recycling, whether we know it or not.
That's great.
Has this always been a passion of yours? It sounds like you've touched all sorts of areas of your industry, waste industry, recycling industry, organics. So is it a passion?
Yeah, I would say it's a passion. And I guess through my life, through the past, most of my life, there's been different things that has brought me, that has kind of directed that passion. Certain time, there's just a lot of waste. Humans consume a lot of waste. One thing that kind of pushed me even farther into this was I had a friend's son who passed away. And I did not know what to do. And they were avid recyclers. It was their whole lives. And then when their son, he was 18, and it was on graduation day that he passed away. It was an accident. It's very tragic. And I didn't know how to help them. And so I just said, you know what? I'm going to recycle. I'm going to make sure that you guys create the less amount of waste possible through this event, this trauma that you guys are going through. And so I worked real hard for a year to make sure that, because they just had, people bringing food and gifts and they couldn't think about it. So my job was to set up systems in their household so, they could recycle everything. And because of my industry and because of my work, I have the ability to recycle difficult to recycle things that most consumers don't. So I had that avenue. And when that happened in the early 2000s, that kind of pushed me in a different direction of where I could end up. I thought, I could take this and show other companies how to do that. And that's when I got hired on as a sustainability consultant.
Yeah, and let's talk about sustainability real quick. So first of all, I never even thought about how personal family events affect the waste stream. Mm-hmm. I think about it at Christmas time when, we try like wrapping presents, I'm trying to reuse stuff. But I never thought about like a tragic death, a funeral when everybody brings food and then there's so much food that it's likely to go, half of it's going to get eaten. So to me, I mean, that's a first light bulb moment about everybody has heard of reduce, reuse, recycle, right? We know the three R's. We get taught that when we know that's the three legs of the recycling triangle. But I think one of the things that really inspires me when you and I have been talking is this concept of bringing the fourth R into the front of that formula, the front of that component, which is rethinking things from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right. We've been trained that after we have an event, then we do the cleanup, then we do the sorting. Like our state fair, our local county fair is coming up. And it drives me crazy that you have all these food vendors that are selling water bottles and soda cans, and there's no obvious designated way to get the community to at least divert that stuff out of the waste stream, right? I get we can't clean everything, but can we just go for the low-hanging fruit and rethink how we set up an event, whether it's a funeral, whether it's a graduation, whether it's a business system or whether it's a community event. So talk a little bit about some of the things that you've been successful at helping people rethink on the front end, things that might help the average everyday consumer.
Well, yeah, I just think when you're purchasing something, you have to think about where is this going to end up going? And creating systems in your home so you have places to recycle, and really thinking about what you're purchasing. When it comes to stuff like that, I think reusable things is the best. I mean, that's, if you can purchase something bulk, is a big thing, is purchasing in bulk so you can use reusable containers. Setting up systems in your car so you remember your reusable containers. I think that becoming involved in your local area to see what their options are and supporting the systems that they currently have and work to make them better.
And step back from that. Educate yourself about what systems exist in your local area.
Yeah, I have a list of seven things.
Yeah, read them off.
Okay, the first is educate. So you said education. Getting it in schools. So, you're training these kids because, for a really good example, and a dream of mine would be to be, you could have a school district that recycles and has, a few different composting systems, because one composting system won't work for everything. If you have a whole district involved, you have kindergarten through high school, and you can have, it can be a whole curriculum, and where they can actually sell their materials. And take a step back and explain something so people can understand. The company that first hired me to bring them to, quote, zero waste, their garbage bill was around $10,000 a month. And by the time I left, their garbage bill was $25 a month.
Wow.
And they sold over $47,000 a year in commodities.
So this pause right there. Everybody, we're in an inflated economy right now. Yeah. Gas is high. Groceries are high. Meat is 17% higher than it was a year ago. Dairy is 7% higher than it was a year ago. If any of our listeners right now are struggling with where is the money going, and it's going out faster than it's coming in, garbage is actually one of the places you could start trimming ridiculous amounts of fat, right?
Yeah. I mean, for a consumer and for a resident, your most garbage bills are between $15 to $25 a month. So there's not, you can trim that down, but it's usually a set fee. So
right,
that part, but if you were to, not have to pay for your garbage, which that makes it difficult. So we really make money on that. On the recycling end of things is when you're in bigger, when you're selling
right,
like cardboard and plastic film and clear PET and clear, high density polyurethane. There's, and when you're not throwing, a lot of things for bigger companies is like polystyrene foam. That takes up a lot of space in a dumpster, where you could choose to, you don't get a lot of, it's not a high market commodity, but you can recycle that for free and not have to pay to throw it in the garbage.
So I'll give you a quick live example, and I want to come back to your list because we did one of seven. My neighbor across the street has a garbage dumpster, like a 2.5-yard dumpster, and they order a lot from online sales. Online sales obviously things come delivered in cardboard boxes.
Mm-hmm.
On a daily basis, cardboard's going in his dumpster. He's actually paying to load up his dumpster and have someone put it in the landfill when he could make a choice to divert that. I've even told him, every time you get a cardboard box, throw it in the back of my pickup truck. It's literally 10 feet away from your dumpster.
Mm-hmm.
By you not putting that bulky stuff in your dumpster, that's saving you money. It's giving you the space you can actually throw the things away you can't recycle. And then it's not going to the landfill, right? I'm trying to influence his decision making by making it easy for him to divert a very easily recyclable material away from the landfill. But there's a mentality of it's just easier to throw it all away. It's just easier to put it in the dumpster. It's going to go someplace else. As long as I don't see it, it's fine. Right. So that comes back to the education component. I think it's not just in the schools. I think that we have to talk to our neighbors and we have to identify places within the system that are the low hanging fruit.
Right.
So education is one. What's another one? So number two.
I'm going to go through them really quick. I won't sideline.
Yep. Nope. You're good.
So education, working, and that's within the schools and everybody, really educating people. Smarter consumers, teaching with the education, teaching consumers, because that's an actual thing. You can consume smarter, and that'll create less waste. Creating a circular economy. And producer responsibility. Okay, so number three is creating a circular economy. Number four is producer responsibility. Number five is policy at your local, state, and federal level. And then number six is technology. Versus from waste to energy to the way sorting machines work to make it, you know, faster and easier and more productive. And then last of all, seven is innovation. You know, mycelium can eat plastic. You can use beeswax as toppers on wine bottles. There's all kinds of different things, you know, and I think that you have to come at this crisis that we have with our waste stream at all different ways and just really work to attack it. But, you know.
Yeah, and I want to tie something in, you know, and Jacob is our producer in the background. So, you know, Jacob, at any point, if anything triggers something for you, feel free to hop on the conversation. But I want to pull up, I just want to have Jacob flash the website of the inspiration. You're literally talking about a linear system, and your business was inspired by the YouTube video and the organization, The Story of Stuff. And I encourage people to go to this website, http://storyofstuff.org. It's a 2-minute and 19-second video that really kind of simplifies this concept that you're talking about, your seven steps.
Yeah.
And the thing that caught me in that video was, our waste stream is a linear stream, but we're assuming that the earth is an infinite resource, that we can extract infinitely, we can produce infinitely, we can consume infinitely, and we can throw away infinitely. And the reality is that's not true, right? So if that's not true, and infinity is not a component of the formula, then we literally have to rethink at the beginning of the cycle. For the consumers, it's at the purchase point, but for producers, it's at the production and extraction point. So I want to give a little quick shout out. I think you mentioned to me, was it Coca-Cola that you mentioned to me has made the decision not to produce Sprite in green bottles anymore?
Yes.
Okay. So like, let's acknowledge a producer who's making a different decision, a different choice to provide a product that people want in a container that's actually more efficient for them. They actually make more money by putting Sprite in a clear bottle than they do putting it in a colored bottle, right?
Yes.
Right. So now they're figuring out there's a bottom line. There's a dollar that could be saved or made by changing the way they think about their production. I would argue that consumers, there's a dollar to be made or a dollar to be saved with the way we change how we think about consumption, use, and waste.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So what do you want? What are some of the myths about the recycling world or the plastic world? Like, what's just complete BS that's floating around out there that we need to correct?
Well, a lot of people think that recycling should be free. And it's not. So how are you phrasing that? Rephrasing it like in the.
Well, like, here's the thing. So that's a myth, right? People think recycling should be free. But there's, for your business, there's a cost to hiring an employee, buying a truck, driving it someplace.
Can I hold on a second?
I
need to step away just for like a quick second.
Yeah, no problem. So, Jacob, can we take a quick break, Jacob, and we'll be right back?
Yep, sounds good to me.
Hey, everyone. Check out this new app I'm featured in. You're going to look for KS Media Group app in the App Store. Download it. Launch and create your free account. Get the free ebook. You're going to find me under directories. Click on resources of the world's best influencers. Find me at the top of the list and take advantage of evolving your daily practice, cultivating deep inner peace, growing in love with my YouTube channel, and all the ways that you can connect with me now on social media and other ways as well. There's also a long list of live podcasts there that are listed under the directories to help you to live your best life now. Go and hurry. Get the KS Media app. Go to the App Store and download it now.
Juggling life's relentless demands can leave us unbalanced and restless. Do you feel stuck in the overwhelm? Diane McClay is a personal empowerment coach, author, and compassionate storyteller on a mission to boost you into balance and help you move forward with passion and purpose. Get unstuck with Diane on The Diane McClay Show every second and fourth Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Diane, visit DianeMcClay.com.
Hey, welcome back in. We had to take a quick break. Julie was actually getting knocks on her door with people asking her literal recycling questions about a new program she started in our area. So she had to step away. We're back again, but we were just talking about the myths of recycling. And just before she was interrupted, Julie's talking about how a lot of people think that recycling should just be free. And I think I think we need to dive into that concept a little bit, and we need to rethink that. So why do people think it should be free? And then help people understand why it really isn't sustainable to make it free.
I think that in the 70s, when the whole recycling industry kind of started booming, there was people were making money off of the commodities. And there was only three things that were being recycled at that time. It was cardboard, glass, and metal. And at that time, those all had high commodity. They were all worth a lot. And so when the garbage companies started collecting them separately, they didn't charge customers extra.
Mm.
It was just incorporated in their bill. So they didn't see that. And then as the industry evolved, they started collecting more items as long as they had market value. And still, it kind of stayed the same. Well, eventually, what was happening is the recycling streams were getting contaminated and they were losing money because most of the stuff they couldn't sell and would end up having to go into the landfill anyway. So then that's where your garbage bill went up, but nobody knew that your garbage bill was going up because they were dealing with contaminated recycling. It just seemed like your garbage bill was going up, that you weren't paying for recycling. It's just, you're paying for your garbage bill, but you got this blue bin that's free.
Got it.
But in reality, nowadays, because of the recycling stream as has evolved and the ebb and flow, you know, you used to be able to put more things in your blue bin, our curbside for recycling, and that's switched over the years to try to accommodate the markets. Your garbage bill is probably you're more paying for recycling than you are actually garbage. And that's something that people just don't quite understand. It also depends where you live. If you live in a metropolitan area, as urban city, or a city area, it's easier to get things to the market versus a rural area it's more expensive. In Oregon, if you don't have any more than I think it's 1,200 residents, the city's not required to offer recycling. And I think there's a similar law in Washington. And if the recycling ends up being more expensive, then for the garbage companies, then legally they don't have to do it. That's why in the state of Oregon, I'm not sure with Washington, but in the state of Oregon, around 2018, they stopped recycling. And they would continue to pick your stuff up, but it was just going into the landfill, and they could legally do that.
Right. And that's another myth, that if I put it in my blue bin or I put it in my roller cart, or even if I hand deliver it to the transfer station, that everything's, if I think it's going to get recycled and they tell me it's going to get recycled, it might be a myth that it actually isn't. One, because of contamination. Yeah. So let's educate about contamination real quick. What is contamination what is common contamination in the most commonly accepted waste streams that a household consumer might try to recycle?
Like peanut butter in a peanut butter jar.
Pizza in a pizza box. Grease, yes. And leftover cheese stuck on the cardboard.
Yeah, when they're leaving food. Food is a big one, because by the time it actually gets to the markets, you know, it's grown food, you know, mold, different types of bacteria. It attracts animals. You know, and so, you know, the minute they see any food debris, they let it go. A lot of standing liquids in bottles goes, you know. And then you have your contamination of putting the wrong things in there. You know, we recycle plastic film, and an example is, and a lot of times consumers aren't meaning to contaminate. They have good intentions. But when we do like our plastic film recycling, ours goes through on a conveyor belt and it gets scanned. And if it thinks there's a certain type of material that shouldn't be out of there, it literally gets shoved off this conveyor.
Right.
And they track it. And then I get charged to have to throw that away.
Right. So your garbage bill goes up.
Yeah.
So part of the reason why recycling, really, it's a myth that it should be free, is first of all, it actually isn't. It's just kind of hidden in your garbage costs. Mm-hmm. And second of all, there's a lot of costs on your end as a supply manager, as a materials management firm. You have costs for labor, trucks, gas, overhead, drive time, breakdowns. And then on top of that, like, that's normal operating business costs, right? And that eats into your margin of your product that you're trying to sell upstream. And I want to talk about upstream, downstream in a little bit. But in addition to that, if you get contaminated materials, the consumer, I don't pay to have that. I'm not penalized as a consumer. You as the business owner are penalized with a cost to your garbage, which then lowers your margin, which makes your efficiency and your economics significantly less. Yes. I remember working for the Bureau of Land Management in Idaho, and fire camps are a huge place of waste, right? Yes. We're in an emergency situation. We go buy tons of stuff for every fire crew member, and then we just throw it in a bag and throw it away. Well, I started sorting things out, and I realized in Idaho there was a market for certain things. But then what happened is the mentality of the fire camp officer was, well, if we don't get paid for it, we're not going to recycle it, right? And I think that's another place of education. Like, you should do it because it's the right thing. And at the bare minimum, like, if I divert things out of my waste stream, even if I can't make money on it as a private consumer, if I give it to you as a materials handler and you can collect 10,000 pounds of it, you now can make money to help create something that's better for the environment, better for the earth, better for our river systems, and then better ultimately for me as somebody who loves to be out in nature. Yeah. So I think the message I would like our listeners to hear is, just because you don't get paid for it doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. That's the first one. Yeah. And just because you don't know where the market stream is doesn't mean someone else doesn't, like you. find a materials handler, find a sustainability person, find a consultant like Julie in your area and ask them, what do they take? What do they, how do they want it prepared? Where can you drop it off? Yeah. Become involved in the downstream end after your purchase, right? So let's talk about upstream, downstream. Talk about why that's important to you.
Well, upstream, I mean, is just, you know, like your pre-cycling. And what I tell my customers, particularly my, you know, when they purchase shrink wrap, like the biggest thing they should do is not purchase anything with color on it. You know, you're going to get a higher value. You're going to have a higher value material at the end market if it's all clear. And then also you want to purchase things made post-recycled materials, because that keeps the circular economy going, you know, and it keeps things going back in and, you know, until it's degraded enough to where it can't be recycled. You know, there's the whole plastic industry is a whole nother thing.
We could do a whole podcast series on the petroleum
industry. Yeah.
Right. Maybe we do that. Maybe we make a podcast about plastics, but.
Yeah. And then, so I think, you know, upstream thinking that way. And like I said, reusable things, partnering with other companies that use similar materials, you know, like if, you know, to have a space for communities who can share materials. So, you know, one man's garbage is another man's treasure. That still works even in manufacturing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so the you and I both live in the Columbia River Gorge. And for our listeners who don't know, Oregon's on one side of the river, Washington's on the other side of the river. And I want to just do a touchback, you know, on my other show, The Shift, the perspective and our power to change. We always honor the indigenous tribes and people that exist in the lands that I'm currently doing business from in my home. So in our region, you know, it's the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs, the Yakima Nation, the Nez Perce Nation, even as far down to the Columbia River where it meets the Pacific is, you know, the Chinook Nation, the Upper Chinook, Lower Chinook Nation. And there's a lot of unnamed people and tribes and bands of people in between. But back in the time when the river system was literally an economic trade system, there was a very astute and intellectual awareness of how somebody contributed to the waste stream upstream. Literally, if you do something in or on the river, it's going to float down and affect your fellow communities. Yeah. I think we've in our very modern industrial society, we've lost track of that connectivity, that system, that what I do at my part of either the consumer process or on the river still has the ability to impact other people. And I remember doing this game in an environmental economic conference where everybody got a piece of a map. And you didn't know how the map got put together, but you were asked to, you know, build whatever you want to build, put whatever you want. And essentially you pulled things out of your pocket to represent how much level of building you did. And some people, you know, just were a farm, and some people were a production city. And then basically we put the map together and we got to see how all the stuff touched the different pieces of the river. And we got to see just the concept of how much you build out on the upstream affects the downstream. Now, literally, you're using that analogy as the waste stream, and your goal is to help create a positive downstream experience by improving the upstream recycling, right?
Turning your waste stream into a resource stream.
Yeah, exactly. Turning your waste stream into a resource stream.
And that can mean monetarily or you know, metaphysically.
Right. So we're talking plastics, and that's like a whole entire like encyclopedia show in and of itself. But what are some top two or three, four things that you'd like people to know about how the plastic recycling industry has changed and is changing that could have impact their rethinking?
So there's a handful of plastic. There's purchasing post-consumer recycling. So if you buy something, you know, I think one of, it's important to look and see if you can buy something that's made out of recycled material. Because if you do that, you're helping put money into the circular economy to keeping it going. If you're going to buy certain plastics, like I said, I mean, the number one is just buy clear, you know, try not to buy anything that's colored, you know, and really to shift from, if you're buying things that are in plastic packaging, try to find a bulk. I mean, I like to say, I like my, our company, I joke that I'm trying to work myself out of a job. I like recycling, but it's just one step up from the landfill. You know, it costs a lot of money to recycle. It's hard on the environment. If you don't have to do it, you shouldn't. But at this, I you know, where we're at, we're never going to get plastics out of our waste stream.
Right.
You know, it's just not, especially with, you know, you have the medical, you know, medical supplies that are always going to be there.
Right.
You know, but.
Well, let's give a couple examples of some things you and I do in our own personal worlds to try to walk the talk. Right. So I don't drink soda a lot. If I choose to get one, I'm choosing to get it in an aluminum can because I know that there's a high market value for that aluminum. The other thing I do is that if I'm on the road, if I'm traveling and I feel like I need to have a carbonated beverage, I have a stainless steel water bottle and I go to a convenience store that has a fountain service. So instead of getting a plastic lid, a plastic straw, and a cup, which now have to be thrown away, I will use a stainless steel water bottle. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you pay for a large drink, 16 or 32 ounce or 64 ounce drink, you're going to pay like as much as $3 and, you know, 39 cents for an extra large. But if you bring your water bottle, they charge you like, you know, $1.05. So it's cheaper for me to actually use a recyclable container to go to a fountain. I'm not paying for the waste. I'm not throwing it away. And I still get the same type of product that I would get if I was buying it in a capped plastic water bottle. Those are two things that I choose to do to reduce my dependency on plastic.
I would say the biggest thing I do is bulk. You know, I really try to buy everything in bulk if I can, but that's not easy for a lot of people. So I, you know, if you can't buy in bulk, I think it's just being mindful of the packaging that you're buying, choosing between, an aluminum or glass. You know, I do the same thing. I very rarely buy something in a plastic bottle.
Right.
You know, one of the things where producer responsibility comes in, and I think if you're really wanting to make monumental change in like as on a global level, it has to be socioeconomic, because all of the things that we're talking about are only a small percentage of people in our world have the opportunity to make those choices, because a lot of people can't choose to do that because of economic reasons.
Right.
It's actually, you know, especially if you go to a Dollar Tree, those are the worst, but at the same time, or, you know, in our area, there's a lot, you know, I don't like to shame people at all for not doing it. It's when people choose to buy something that they know they shouldn't. A lot of times it's that they just don't have the capacity to even be concerned about the environment because they're just trying to survive.
Right. Right. And the thing is we're asking our listeners where you can. Again, yeah. the word over my shoulder is choice.
Right.
Right.
So
go ahead.
I'm saying that is that, like, to make a global change for everybody, what a person can do is create producer responsibility. Right. If they're buying something And if somebody has time to do this, and somebody has time to make a choice to work on policy and producer responsibility, so they're not creating a negative waste stream. That's the best thing a person can do.
Well, and tagging onto that, I can't cite the article that I was reading, but there was an article that was talking about how you as a consumer can try to influence your brand producers that you typically go. So there's actually, what I will do is I will find the letter and I will put it up on my website and I will put it at the end of this trailer when I load this video to my YouTube channel. But there's essentially a template letter that says, dear favorite snack food company, I love your product. However, I'm now choosing to not buy your product because of the way you're packaging, right? I would love to see you find a more earth-friendly way of packaging this. And if you do, I'll be the first person to, shout from the rooftops that everybody needs to buy this.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the processed food industry alone, we've moved into fast, quick, easy, right? And this is a bigger problem than just consumption, because we're taught, we have a society where you have to work three or four jobs to pay your rent. So if you have to make three or four jobs to pay your rent, then you lose time for at-home food preparation. Yeah. And the processed food industry has figured that out, because the keywords are quick, easy, fast, right? And who doesn't want that? Who doesn't want something that looks like a healthy meal that you can just put in the microwave for 3 minutes and call it good? But what we're challenging our listeners is, we're not asking you to just suddenly start eating dandelion greens out of your own yard, although that's certainly a good idea if you don't treat them with an herbicide. But we're asking people to just be conscious, have some more thought about. So for me personally, another thing I've done is I've stopped buying toilet paper that is, and I've said this on the show a couple of times and I always get a giggle from some of my friends, but I purchase from a company who gives a crap. It's bamboo paper, so it's farmed bamboo, which is sustainable. They wrap it in tissue paper to keep it sanitary, and it comes in a cardboard box, and they give 50% of their profits to places that need to develop water sanitation and sewer sanitation, right? So that's an example of a circular economy, because I'm buying a product that's giving back to the earth and to people in a different region. Yeah. And I'm also not contributing to the waste. Well, yeah. I am contributing to the waste stream, but that's a completely different side, right? But we're just asking people to pause for a minute, rather than just automatically buying the thing you've always bought. We're asking you to ask yourself this question: what is the impact of buying this product to my body and to the earth? Is there a different way I could buy a similar product? Is there a way I could reduce my waste stream? And if there is, then on the other end, how can I educate myself about what's in my area? Right? I've joked with my parents. I'm like, hey, I now have a number 4 soft plastic film outlet. Put it in a box and mail it to me. I'll make sure it goes to where it needs to go. Now, there's a cost to delivering it and there's a cost to mailing it, but it's not getting put in the landfill. And my theory is, if I'm going to pay to put it in the landfill, I should be willing to pay to put it in the right place to create the circular economy and do better for the earth.
Yes.
So thoughts, I feel like I'm kind of going on a monologue here. Jump in here. And we've talked about some tips and strategies, but what do you want people to know in the last few minutes that we have?
Well, you brought up the who gives a crap thing. There's and at some point on our website, which will also, so I have Emerald Systems LLC, which is where we work with big companies. And then I have the Gorge Sustainability Project, which is where we're working with the community members. And we're kind of creating this pilot project that other rural communities or small communities can use as a block system to create their own. So, and within that of our, like this project on our website, which we'll have soon, but we'll have a list of all the things you can do, like links to who gives a crap. And then there's if somebody just sits down and takes the time and Googles, how to become, how to reduce my waste stream, there's so many different things that pop up on the internet. you know, there's toothpaste bites, so you don't have to buy toothpaste. I think if the company's called Bites and everything they have is either metal or glass or cardboard. And so it's all like a high-end waste stream that you would have in the end.
Right. And you're in your world, you know, one of the things that's hard is if the plastic doesn't actually have a legible, obvious number on it, it's not something that at this moment you can put into the supply chain. Right. So another thing to do is I've switched from one brand of a toothpaste company, which comes in a plastic tube because they're not labeled. Mm-hmm. And I've switched to one that is obviously labeling their tube. That's a simple switch, right? I don't have to go to toothpaste Bites like you're talking about, but now I'm choosing to look at the labeling on the box. And if it's clearly something that I know my waste hauler will take, right, I'm more inclined to buy that than I am with a thing that's like, I think they could take it.
Right. And most people don't have access to recycle toothpaste tubes. It's not something that is some like most communities have. So, right, you know, I mean, that's why I always encourage people to try to find a different alternative. There's toothpaste powder now. I right. personally think it's all, I don't care for any of it. Most of my life to use normal toothpaste.
Right. Right. So, you know, we have just a few minutes left. I mean, people can find you. So commercial people can contact you at www.emeraldsystems.org,
yes,
right? Not .com. That's something completely different. So emeraldsystems.org. And can people contact you if they have questions, even though they might not be in our regional area? Are you open to receiving questions or emails of people need some guidance?
Yeah, the best way is the julie@emeraldsystems.org, but you can also do the info@emeraldsystems.org.
Okay. Okay. And people can contact me too, you know, coachwithdiane@dianemcclay.com. I don't have all the answers, but I have the desire to try to get them. And I have the desire to try to connect people to the right place at the right time. And I believe in this concept of always changing our perspective. If we're just willing to ask what if and why not, those are two of my favorite questions. What if there's a different way of doing things? What could happen if I try, and why shouldn't I try? I feel like that's a really good start to the recycling conversation and to the rethinking how we actually purchase, consume, and waste.
Yep.
Yep. We've got a few more minutes. So what have we not covered? We talked about myths. We talked about rethinking. We talked about looking at like a little inside look into your industry. What do you want people to know? I mean, what do we need to leave people with? And we've got a few more minutes, so let me know. We have about 8 minutes left, so let's talk about some things that we haven't talked about.
I always like to talk, I mean, at the terminology of sustainability. People don't, you know, it's such a wide, it can mean many different things to different people. And I always, one of the things I like to talk about is, you know, those three pillars of sustainability. You have your people and the people, social, your planet, and, you know, like your economic. And that's, in order for something to be sustainable, all three of those have to work together. You know, so, you know, you have to have a healthy environment to support healthy people, and you have to have healthy people to, you know, create resources for those people to survive. And you have, you know, but you can't have anything if you don't have a healthy planet and a healthy ecosystem. And then it all comes down to that is, you know, you have to have healthy people, and happy, healthy people tend to make healthier decisions. And so it all kind of, you know, it all comes back to that, you know, that really, you know, if a company or if a person wants to thrive, they really need to support their environment first, you know, the actual physical world and themselves. And so it really comes down to just really, I think, each person individually loving themselves enough to want to take care of the world.
Yeah, it's all intertwined. You know, when we took a break, Jacob, our producer, was saying, you know, he gave us a story where he said, you know, I remember I was in eighth grade and my best friend, you know, encouraged me to sort through the trash at school to pull out the recycling. And as an eighth grader, you know, there's the embarrassment. There's the, okay, what's that weird kid doing? But, you know, Jacob is a young adult now. And that memory of his friend encouraging him to go against the grain, do something that was a little unusual, not be worried about what people think because it was good for the environment. If I'm summarizing this, so if I get it wrong, Jacob can jump in on this. But, you know, he's like, that memory has stayed with him into his adulthood. Jacob loves the outdoors. That's one of his passions, is to be able to go hiking and see beautiful things with his wife. And that's what you and I like to do too. And so I can't help but wonder if that experience when he was an eighth grader of doing something to take care of his immediate environment fuels his desire to, you know, to take care of the environment as an adult, right? And it can be something little and tiny and small, like that one thing that ignites the spark and allows just a little ripple of a change to happen in ourselves, in our psychology. Like you said, you have to love yourself enough. I can only imagine how much courage it would take for an eighth grader to be the weirdo in school to pull recycling out, right? But because he had that courage and he had that self-love, he did it. And now it's may not be a foundation of his world, but it obviously contributed to this conversation today in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I read, I like to read a lot. I read like sometimes 2 books a week. And I went on this phase of reading about what inspired like top sustainability leaders in around the world. And the most common thing was something triggered them around that age, either when around the age of, I think it was like 8 years old, and then also as an adolescent, there was all of them had some sort of marker that triggered something for them to continue down that path. So,
yeah, and for me, you know, my new trigger recently is how sad my heart feels when I realize that animals are consuming plastic, or some of these most beautiful, pristine places that don't have any plastic in them whatsoever. Scientists are discovering microplastics in the snow fields and the glacier fields. That's something that pulls at my heart very, very strongly. And if you feel emotionally triggered by something that you see happening in some other part of the world, if it's happening in some other part of the world, it's absolutely happening in your part of the world. You either just choose not to see it, you can't see it, or someone's making an effort to hide it. And I would get curious about what those things are. You know, if you get triggered about seeing the big garbage plastic float off the coast of India or Hawaii or Africa or any place like that, there's going to be a garbage float somewhere in your community. It just may not be as ridiculously obvious as what we see on the news. So you mentioned books. Do you have any references that our listeners, any recycling references or anything handy off the top of your head that is a good go-to for any of our listeners?
I always like to suggest Cradle to Cradle. I don't know if it's an old school one. Waste-free. Well, I do have a great book. Hold on here. I'm going to look on my Audible.
Okay.
I'll tell you what it is. Because it's one of my favorite books. Cradle. Another thing, The Waste-Free World. By Ron Gonin.
Okay. Waste of the World, Cradle to Cradle, and Waste Free. So if you're, go ahead.
If you're looking to change your habits and how you do things, my other favorite book is The Power of Habit.
And that's not just recycling. That's just like Power of Habits in general.
Yeah. But I mean, for me, I had to create habits and systems for my own personal life. To be able to make changes, so I make less impact.
Well, and I think that's a good closing point, right? I think maybe looking, have our listeners go home today. It's the weekend. So when they get a chance, just look around their house and what is the system that they have for their waste management? I just put my mulch pile is really, really dry. We've been in a drought for a while. I just texted my neighbors and said, if anybody's got vegetable scraps, I'll put a bucket out right in front of my garage. It says vegetable mulch. And I have my neighbors dropping off stuff that they would normally just throw away. Right. So now I've created a system. I've created a place to put things and I've created a process for other people. And I've educated people that this process is available. And it's literally a 5-gallon bucket with a lid on it. Right. So I would encourage our listeners to go home this weekend and just look around their office, look around their garage. What is the system that they have for getting rid of stuff? And can they make one or two small things that actually thinks about the waste stream and the earth before they think about how easy it is to just get rid of it? Last thoughts. We got a minute left.
I mean, it all starts with us, individuals. You know, small increment things too. I mean, and I think just also one small thing makes a big difference. Making, you know, it doesn't have to be big. You know, it can be as little, it just make, you know, deciding one small thing to change that you're doing and work on that for a couple months.
One small thing to change can make a difference. Mm-hmm. Make it a habit.
Yeah.
Make a system around it.
Yeah.
Tell people about it and encourage other people to use your system as a template, right?
Yes.
Awesome. So this is Julie Tucker. She's the owner and project manager of Emerald Systems LLC, and you can find her at emeraldsystems.org. I'm Diane McClay. Thank you for taking time to tune in. You can always find me at dianemcclay.com. You can also look me up the Cornelia Stephanie Media Group app in your Google Play Store. There's some awesome, great things that are happening in that app where there's actually 10 minutes of how you can make new habits every day with seven different specialists. So I encourage you to check that out. KS Media Group app on the Google Play Store. Hey, I'm Diane. Thanks for tuning in. Take care of yourself. Take care of your neighbor and take care of the earth. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Diane McClay Show, where you are empowered to enact change in your life through choice. You know that little voice in your head that's been telling you to pursue that passion project? Or maybe it's been screaming for you to go outside and explore the great outdoors. That voice is you, and you deserve to be heard. Listen, make a choice, make a change, and watch yourself grow. For more information about Diane or to work with her personally, visit dianemcclay.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.